ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I sort of suspect that it's more fun to come into the office if you're the boss than if you're the subordinate or mid-level manager, because if you're the boss, you know, everyone smiles at you, defers to you, and so on. That's sort of an ego boost. Where on the other hand, if you are the copy person, it's like, really? I get dumped on again. I'd rather just do this from home.
Most people don't want to not come into the office. They just don't want to be there 5 days a week. They do see the value of it. They like seeing their colleagues. They like culture building events. They're, you know, there are certain things that they can see the value in, but they do also like to retain that flexibility so they can combine some home tasks, some work tasks.
Somebody who I know has a recruitment business, and he did an experiment and he posted two job adverts, the same ad job advert. And it was a fake advert. It was not a real job. He was just doing it as a social experiment. The same advert, same text, apart from one thing. One said hybrid and one said in the office.
Right.
The full-time in the office had 13 applicants and the one that was hybrid had 217 applicants.
Oh, wow. Wow, indeed. Return to office mandates have been a big topic in the news over the past few months. But since the pandemic, lots of us have enjoyed ways of working flexibly. Take my working life. In any week, you can find me behind a microphone in my home office, smashing out emails at my local cafe, or interviewing guests in an ABC studio. I'm flexi, baby. So why are CEOs urging us to work on site? And what's the evidence for that actually being a good idea? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong, and for this working life, the first in a two-parter about flexible work. First up, the battle to get you back into the office.
My name is Stephen Davis. I'm a senior fellow and director of research at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University.
Let's start with a reveal then, Stephen. What's your preferred way of working?
I mostly come to the office because I like my colleagues. I have a wonderful office and I have responsibilities that require me to be here. But I also like working in coffee shops from time to time and sometimes at home.
And in the United States, how much time are employees spending in the office now?
Our best assessments that they spend maybe a quarter of their full paid work days offsite somewhere. Usually it's at home, but sometimes it's in a coffee shop or even at a friend's home.
And Stephen, I've got to ask, what has this high working from home rate meant for burglars?
Burglars. Oh, you caught that one. Yeah. Well, it's bad news for burglars in residential neighborhoods because somebody might be at home when you burgle the house. On the other hand, there are a lot of empty office spaces, so maybe they need to just migrate to the office. That is one of the more amusing findings of recent work in this topic.
You just hosted the 2024 Remote Work Conference at Stanford. What was the mood at the conference about return to office mandates in the States, Stephen?
Well, we had two papers on exactly that topic. And interestingly, neither of these studies found much evidence that return to the office mandates mattered performance one way or the other. But one study did find a very revealing pattern of the data, which is the companies that were most likely to introduce a return to the office mandate are the ones that had been suffering in the stock market a lot. So it's like, we need to do something here because things don't look very good. Let's try a return to the office.
What do you think was the thinking behind, hey, let's get everyone back to the office if we're not performing well in the stock market?
Well, a lot of senior managers came up in a system. Most of them came up in a system where people were mostly in the office. It also typically served them well personally in their own career development because that's why they're the boss. So there's kind of good reasons to think that many CEOs, not all, but many CEOs would be more favorably disposed to working mostly from the office. Another common feature, you know, in this return to the office mandate is companies are in some cases implementing two or three or even more return to the office mandates because the first ones didn't work out. And they often didn't work out because there's so much employee resistance or talented people just leaving. That's a change in the competitive landscape. And what we typically see, even for these companies that implement the return to office mandates in a loud way, is that quietly behind the scenes, they make exceptions for their most talented employees that they really want to keep and would otherwise lose.
Stephen, I'm interested in who leaves then, if there is a quite a severe return to the office mandate. Would it have any effect on diversity, do you think?
First of all, there's abundant evidence that parents with children in the household are really keen to work from home at least 2 or 3 days a week. So if you are really keen to foster good career trajectories for, say, professional women who have children, it's going to be a serious advantage if you can offer them some flexibility that lets them feel like they're doing what they want to at home at the same time as they pursue their careers. Secondarily, there is some evidence that people who feel themselves to be in a distinct minority in the workplace, that could be men or women, it could be your race, your ethnicity, it could also be your religious viewpoint or your political persuasion. And then the work site's just a little bit less comfortable to be around because, you know, we don't like to be constantly challenged in our worldviews and our outlooks or our religious persuasion. So I suspect some flexibility in working arrangements also makes it easier to attract a diverse workforce. And here I mean diverse across many dimensions.
What's the evidence that working in the office is more productive than working from home?
Well, the evidence is pretty mixed. And if you just step back and think about it for a minute, you need to interact with customers or sometimes coworkers or specialized equipment. There's very little scope for working remotely. But there are many other jobs. You know, I've been a college professor most of my career, so I'll just use that as an example. If I want to teach my students, then it's really beneficial to be there in person when I'm teaching them. On the other hand, if I'm grading their papers, writing the exams, or trying to sketch out my lecture notes or something, I don't need to be in the office to do that. So many jobs are like that in that there's a whole range of tasks they involve. Why do I go through all this? Just to make the point, there's no one-size-fits-all here approach that's likely to work with respect to work from home versus work in the office. Instead, jobs differ a lot in their suitability, and so do people. Some people are very good at working remotely in a disciplined manner, and some just want to flip on the TV or raid the refrigerator or take an extra nap. Even organizations, you got to think about the HR system within an organization. If you're going to have people who are working remotely or hybrid, well, how do you assess their performance? How you give them an upward mobility path? How do you give them mentoring? All these things need to be thought about. So there's no one-size-fits-all answer.
The most publicized story about return to office mandates recently was the Amazon story announcing all employees must be in the office 5 days a week from January. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it's an aggressive policy, not so much for the warehouse workers and so on and the delivery people who obviously need to be on the spot, but Amazon does employ a lot of IT workers, a lot of professionals, and many of those people do have options elsewhere. And I expect what you'll see is that a good number of them will, over the next few months, move to other positions at other companies or perhaps quietly secure an exception. It might mean a lot for Amazon and who works at Amazon and how they work. I don't think it will greatly change the overall landscape because other companies are saying, look, if Amazon wants to make all of its employees go back to the office 5 days a week, maybe I can poach some of those people. So there are companies that see the flexibility they offer as a competitive advantage in the labor market.
Amazon's headline-grabbing return to office mandate is one thing, but what's been happening here in Australia? John Hopkins is an associate professor of management at Swinburne University. And for the record, he's a hybrid fan.
There are a couple more in the media recently, certainly Flight Centre and Dell were mentioned. Now, Dell had said that they were encouraging more people to come to the office more often. They certainly didn't say 5 days in their statement. And with Flight Centre, they're a retail company anyway. So what I would say is, and even in their statement, they said their work is from work. And I would say for a large majority of their workers, that's the way they would work anyway. And I know even from our research, so in the past, we've researched companies about flexible work arrangements. And the companies that have a large number of frontline workers, so like in retail or in factories or distribution centres, people whose jobs, they physically have to be there and they have to be there at a particular time. So they don't have flexibility over time or place. And if you work for those companies, but you don't have a frontline job, we found that it has an impact because they don't want to create a them and us culture. So it definitely impacts flexible work arrangements. So I would say somewhere like Flight Centre would probably fall into that basket.
And using Australia organisations as an example, how much time are employees generally spending in the office now in Australia?
So we did a survey of 1,300 knowledge workers 2 years ago, so 2022. We've just repeated that this year. So we've seen that actually hybrid work has grown. So back in 2022, around 56% of workers split their time between the office and working remotely, and now that's risen to 73%. And the number of those who are spending their full time in the office or working full time remotely, they've both dropped.
Interesting. And what does the research tell us about that sweet spot between days spent working from home and in the office then?
Yeah, it tends to be around 2 to 3 days, obviously depending on the type of role, but most people don't want to not come into the office. They just don't want to be there 5 days a week. They do see the value of it. They like seeing their colleagues. They like culture building events, that you know, there are certain things that they can see the value in, but they do also like to retain that flexibility so they can combine some home tasks, some work tasks. So that sweet spot does tend to be around 2 to 3 days in each mode.
Richard Wynn is the CEO of the CEO Institute, an organisation offering support for CEOs in Australia and New Zealand. Given those high stakes, what's the sweet spot of his working life?
I'll be honest with you. I think since the world of work has distinctly changed, my personal preference is working from home. I don't not go to the office because we still do have an office in our organization because I think that connection with humans is vitally important. You know, I think that's often the difference between a CEO and a leader. You know, the CEO is there to do all of the commercial things. I get it, and all of that. But the CEO also has to be the leader, has to be there, has to be present, and has to set the right example. So I'm very much in the hybrid model. But if you were to ask me if I could completely rewrite the books, it would be the working from home thing. Because I think, we have proven through COVID that we can do it.
And Richard, I'm interested, do you have any particular days that you always go into the office or what do you do there?
Yeah, so our, not mandated, but our sort of prescribed day is Wednesday. It just seems to break up the week. But when I've often gone in on other days, you really do see the difference in the city of which days people tend to go in. You know, the line at the coffee shop is typically longer on a Wednesday. So that's our chosen day. But a number of my other colleagues go in 3 or 4 days a week because that's what they want to do. You know, I've got a couple of younger people in the business who live in shared houses and they just don't want to work from home. Mm. And that's okay as well. People with younger families who want to drop the kids off and then come in. They couldn't do that before. And now they can because we're just completely, completely flexible.
A KPMG survey came out recently. It said 82% of CEOs want workers back in the office within 3 years, up 60% a year ago. Yeah. How does this survey match up to what your CEO members have been saying about flexible work culture?
It's a very interesting survey that's come out. And we have to take it with a little bit of measurement in the sense that it's 1,300 CEOs from 11 different countries, including Australia, but with an average revenue line of about $500 million. And that's about $750 million Aussie dollars. My members are not necessarily that entire proportion. What have we got publicly listed? Probably what have we got, 140, 150 publicly listed Aussie companies who have a turnover, a revenue line higher than $750 million. The insights from that demographic of CEO, I would probably agree with. But my membership probably represents the other side of that spectrum. And they're really saying a mixed bag of things. And I think there's going to be a lot of experimenting going on in the next couple of years. You know, the working from home, you know, we all know the associated pressures that comes with that going into COVID, during COVID, and then as we come out of COVID. So now we're in a world of this hybrid. Is it return to office? Do we mandate it? Mm. Do we not mandate it? And the CEOs that are talking to us are saying that talent selection, talent development, and talent retention are the three key things that are keeping them up at night. And this, do I mandate or not mandate? Do I go back to the office or not come to the office? That's what fueling those discussions. People have talked about this for years. It's not just about assessing talent for their skills. It's about who are they as a human, as their values, as their culture fit. And I think these are the experiments that CEOs and leaders need to play with to understand what their culture is within their organization to help then define, well, do I need to mandate or not mandate? Then you move on to staff retention. So we've kind of come back to slightly ahead of pre-COVID levels in terms of the job market. But, you know, those ridiculous salaries that were being offered during COVID, that's gone now. So what the talent of today is looking for is that sense of belonging. And that's been fueled by post-COVID return to office moments. So I think that flexibility is an absolute competitive advantage when people are looking at the talent landscape and deciding, am I going to mandate everybody coming back to the office?
So you're saying that having workers have flexible working arrangements or hybrid work, that's the lever that seems to be relevant for both talent acquisition and talent retention so far?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I can, I won't say who, but somebody who I know has a recruitment business, and he did an experiment and he posted two job adverts, the same job advert. And it was a fake advert. It was not a real job. He was just doing it as a social experiment. The same advert, same text, apart from one thing. One said hybrid and one said in the office.
Right.
The full-time in the office had 13 applicants and the one that was hybrid had 217 applicants.
Oh, wow.
That is just one tiny social experiment. It's not, you know, we're not going to sort of rewrite the country's policies based on that. But we as CEOs, we sometimes do sit in our little ivory towers when we actually need to ask what the people want. And if we look at our workforce now, the Gen Ys and the Gen Zs are making up the majority of that. I'm Gen X. You know, I've been used to having face-to-face strategy meetings all my working life. Well, you go and talk to some of the most successful Gen Y entrepreneurs who have only ever done that remotely. So the world of work has changed. So why can't we have the businesses having this hybrid model?
Richard, we're talking about a trend we're seeing of CEOs mandating return to the office. So are you actually seeing an increased demand to have workers back in the office?
Yes is the answer to that. You know, our members are moving towards a mix, a mandated return to office. They're moving from 1 day to 2 days, from 2 to 3, 3 to 4. So you can sort of see they're stepstoning that over probably a number of years. But others are saying, no, I've just realized during COVID that I can do exactly what we did before or better because I've got a better engaged workforce. My retention numbers are better than they've ever been before. We're getting better productivity and better performance from our people in a hybrid environment. So we're still in a period of experiments. And I think when we see data like 83% of CEOs are saying mandating it by 3 years' time, I think we just have to take that with a little bit of caution because that one size certainly does not fit all.
Why then this trend towards back in the office? Is it just the CEO's folly?
So let me frame it this way. I think those leaders that are looking at a return to office to improve their performance or their productivity, I think those CEOs and leaders need to just take a step back and say, well, actually, how was I managing performance and productivity when we were all working in the office? Because if we're suddenly blaming remote working for a decrease in productivity and a decrease in performance, then we probably need to think, well, why did we not have the right policies and procedures in place in the first place? So that's probably the more command and control style of leader. But then if you look at that more coaching style leader that's out there today, they are the ones that have had the better performance and productivity measures pre-COVID. And then during the working from home 3 or 4 years that we've all gone through, and now going into the future, they are seeing still great results, absolutely great results.
And what's the risk for CEOs of mandating return to the office?
There's probably two extremes. If you mandate it and you improve performance, you only improve the performance because you've mandated a return to work, you're probably going to have talent leave your business. Then you've got on the other extreme, if you offer the flexibility and you don't improve your performance, then you're going to lose people because that's by your choice, because you're going to have to performance manage them out of the business. So do we want it to be their choice or your choice? And that's at the two extremes of mandating it or offering flexibility. But what about the thing in the middle where there is a hybrid offering? Is there a blend in the middle between mandating and flexibility where performance and productivity can be improved while still giving our people the right to have a more improved work-life balance than they've ever had before? And when you get the feedback from CEOs who have got great retention in their organizations who have that model, surely that's good ammunition to prove that the hybrid model in this new world of work does actually work.
And Richard, as you've been chatting to CEOs about whether or not to mandate a return to the office, productivity is one thing, but I have heard about culture being affected, loneliness of some younger workers who haven't been into the office at all. What are your reflections on that?
Yeah, look, I think that is an absolute thing that has to be front of mind. The younger demographic, they miss the interactions with each other. Let's go to the gym after work, go to the cinema after work. I categorically agree that is something that needs to be front of mind. But then the older demographic are also getting an improvement from working from home. So I think, again, it's this balance between the two things.
Stephen, we're hearing this theme of it's not one size fits all. So if you are advising an organisation who really want to look at best practice for their own organisation, what questions would you get them to ask to help them lead and navigate through this?
So a few things. First, I'd ask them, are there certain kinds of talent that you have trouble attracting to your organisation given your current approach? And if the answer to that is yes, and it may or may not be yes, but it's yes for many organizations, then say, okay, do any of the jobs that you're seeking to recruit in have some scope for hybrid work? And if so, then you want to ask yourself, okay, well, suppose I only require somebody to come into the office 1 or 2 days a week. Can I then start looking for talented people who might live 50 miles away? Point two is, regardless of whether you're already in the business of allowing some remote work, you got to think through, there's some things you used to take for granted that would happen naturally through the proverbial water cooler conversations or the ability of the junior employee to just knock on the door of the senior employee and ask for advice. Those things won't happen as readily if you have people mostly or partly working somewhere else. So you have to be more intentional about mentoring, about providing networking opportunities for your younger employees in particular, for transmitting company culture. What does that mean in practice? If you take somebody and they're spending 2 days a week working on in their cubicles, mostly by themselves with instruction from their supervisors, maybe those 2 days a week could be done at home. The other 3 days, when you bring them into the office, you make them put on a shirt and tie and so on, then make sure they're actually doing the mentoring, the networking, the culture transmission when they are there and that they get the social aspect. For the people who really value that social interaction, how can I make sure that they still get it if they're only coming into the office 2 days a week? And that can be as simple as things as, well, let's make sure they go out to lunch together. There's things you can do like that, but you need to be intentional about them in a way that you could probably take for granted in the pre-pandemic working environment.
Stephen stressed the need to be intentional about creating a social culture in a hybrid environment. So if you're a manager trying to get bums on seats in the office, how do you do it?
That planning of the days to make it attractive is a really good way of doing it. People actually do like coming in, but they don't like being forced in 5 days. So there is some room for negotiation there. And it really is around planning those days so that people don't see it as a waste. They're not coming in just to fill a requirement, a quota. I've got to come in 5 days, I'm here, or I've got to come in 3 days, or whatever it is. They come in and they're doing meaningful work. They're interacting with the colleagues that they need to see. They're collaborating, and they're not just sitting in on Zoom calls with other people who are working remotely when they're in the office. That creates bad feeling and tension.
The answer to this is all about communication. It's no good just sending an email out saying, from Monday, you're back in 5 days a week. So articulating it, getting the insights, ask your people first. Ultimately, it's the CEO's decision, but get some insights, get some facts and get some data to support or counter your potential mandate. Because if you don't, you will end up with a retention issue again.
Ah, those blaster retention issues. Clearly, we've got some unfinished business here. With that in mind, next week, we're going to get stuck into how to manage hybrid teams. Big thanks to Richard Wynn, CEO of the CEO Institute, John Hopkins, Associate Professor of Management at Swinburne University of Technology, and Stephen J. Davis, Senior Fellow at Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Sam Wicks on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, teamwork makes the dream work. And speaking of cutting-edge employment issues, medicinal marijuana is a recognised therapeutic treatment, but workers need to be aware that they can be sacked for taking medication prescribed by a doctor. Check out the latest episode of The Law Report, where Damien Carrick looks at the case of a Brisbane stevedore who recently lost an unfair dismissal claim after being terminated for failing a random drug test. You can find The Law Report and This Working Life on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.